Welcome to the Vital Veda Show. I am your host, Dylan Smith. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner and health educator based in Australia, and also someone who is very grateful for you for joining me, and someone who is battling or perhaps finding the balance between using my conscious creativity and as opposed to my programmed subconscious mind. What? Say that again. So I've got this subconscious mind, which I've been programmed, particularly in my early childhood, but I've also got this conscious creativity, which is operating from the field of totality, of absolute totality, the field of the manifest, where I can create anything. It's this state of when you're in love or on a honeymoon, you just don't care about the programs. You're just operating without any of these programs. This is what we talk today with the amazing Bruce Lipton, Dr. Bruce Lipton is a PhD, internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirit. He's stem cell biologist, best-selling author of The Biology of Belief, and the recipient of the 2009 GOI Peace Award. He's been a guest speaker on hundreds of TV and radio shows, as well as a keynote presenter for national and international conferences. When I started lecturing on Ayurveda, you know, soon after I was spending a lot of time in India, I was, of course, reiterating the teachings of my gurus, of my teachers. And one of the big things was my teachers are big on the consciousness. And they're like, you know, don't think of the disease. Why are you thinking of disease all the time? Think of health. Why are you thinking of disease if my grandmother has diabetes and my auntie has diabetes? Then I'm going to get diabetes. If you think of that, you're going to invite it. And you know, if you fear the cancer, you'll get the cancer. And why are you thinking of disease all the time? Think of your health. Like, why are you trying to figure out your disease and put your awareness on it and investigate it? Just think about your health or your migraine, your headache, which is, you know, guys, I understand. I see plenty of migraine patients and I treat a lot of migraines and headaches, but still the headache and the migraine is just a small percentage of the body which is undergoing pain. Guys, I know it can be excruciating pain, but still. So this is the type of things which my teacher was teaching and Michelle was sharing. And when I was lecturing, I would have people come up to me and go, do you know Bruce Lipton? I mean, you are like speaking exactly, and I never heard of Bruce Lipton. And they were just like, you are saying exactly what Bruce Lipton does. And it's totally aligned with the Vedic and the Ayurveda system, and particularly the consciousness-based Ayurvedic medicine. Bruce is, and I mean, some of the stuff you say and is like, that's Ayurveda. And Bruce is full power. He's amazing energy. I hardly spoke in this podcast interview and I didn't want to. We were a bit short for time. So it was just like kind of like a monologue of full power. And he was before offline just telling me how important this information is right now in these pandemic times where people are feeling very hardly empowered and they need to become empowered so that they can be creating and governing their own life rather than through government bodies and through corporations and various things. So if you appreciate this podcast, please share it on Instagram story, tag Vital Veda, tag Bruce Lipton, and share it with a friend, send it to a friend, leave a review. That would be much appreciated. Like, reviews are so important because that is how we increase our listens and our downloads, and that's how we get fantastic guests like Bruce. So if you appreciate these high-end conversations with these high-end guests, like Bruce is one of the greatest guests we've had, then check it out because it's really important because that's how we do it and give back, you know, it's really important. So I highly recommend as well you check out the podcast with Dr. Paul Anderson, Cancer from Diagnosis to Empowerment and Integrative Oncology. That's episode 55 on the Vital Veda podcast. Bruce Lipton wrote the foreword to Dr. Paul's book on cancer. And of course, it was talking a lot about cancer. You think you're going to get cancer. You think you, because your mum had cancer, because you have this so-called gene, you're going to get cancer. So Dr. Paul is not only talking about the biology belief and related to cancer. That's just a small bit. But of course, so many aspects of cancer, from diagnosis to empowerment and integrative oncology. So check that out. Episode 55, Dr. Paul Anderson. And check out all the other episodes on the show. We have so many good guests, all in the fields of health, consciousness, spirituality, the Veda. And let me know your thoughts. I want to hear what you think. All right, my friend, much love.
Welcome to All right, Bruce. Wow, it has been so beautiful to see you. It's early sunrise for me, and you've just given me this new explosive energy simultaneously as the sun is rising. So I'm loving it. Thanks so much for joining me.
I'm so appreciated, and thank you for this opportunity, because the message that I think we'll share today is really important for all of our viewers to get hold of, because it's a message of empowerment in a world where everyone seems to be powerless. It's like, no, that's a conscious issue, and hopefully we can help people change their minds about that.
Absolutely, yes. Shifting this stuck, as you said, this powerless, it's like this stuck energy. It's like, let's just break it in and bring it up.
Well, unfortunately, you know, being a resident of New Zealand and seeing what's going on in the world, and especially in Australia, which is like heartbreaking to me, that, oh my goodness, that this is a terrible situation getting worse there, you know?
Yeah. And so for those listening, it's just before Christmas 2021, where the government is, let's just say, dark energies have influenced the majority, and it's perpetuating the conscious collective.
That is a character globally at this point, actually. Yes. Just a little more extreme when I start to hear about my friends in Australia dealing with the current situation on the ground there.
Yeah. So, Bruce, the first thing we asked in the interviews is, what did you do this morning? What was your daily routine? If you know about Ayurvedic medicine, you know that that's such a crucial part to health.
Well, the beautiful part, being the old guy that I am, that first waking up is like, hey, I'm still here. Okay, we got another day. Let's have fun. And then my partner, Margaret, is next to me. And then it's like, oh, another day of love, another day of happiness, another day of honeymoon with my partner. And things that I didn't know for most of my life, but for the last 25 years, living the honeymoon experience is like the joy of waking up every day on this planet.
Love that. So inspiring for relationships to be long lasting.
Yeah, I understand you are getting involved with a more permanent version of relationship coming.
Yes, that's true. As we spoke before offline, so it's inspiring to hear that freshness every day.
Every day is like another day. I have no idea what's going to happen. And it doesn't mean all the things that I want to happen will happen, but that doesn't make any difference to me, because I let go of, oh, it didn't work. Oh, I let go of all that stuff. And it's like, I'm enjoying my existence on this planet. But this is not how I spent the first 40 years of my life. That was a whole different thing. I had to rewrite programs that were controlling my life into this one, which is I'm in love most of the time. And it doesn't just be with my partner, Margaret. It's just I'm in love with being alive on this planet, which is so beautiful, and the opportunities to enjoy. But people are so involved with the minute-to-minute thing going on in this world, and the issues of fear, politics, all these kind of things, take them off the track. And they're not really experiencing the joy of being on this planet. It's interesting, because I'm not, or was not, a spiritual person for over 40 years of my life. I'm a scientist. We don't deal with spirituality. We deal with proteins and cells and genes and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, came with the understanding, okay, I have a life, and then later I'm back into chemistry, and then, you know, that was that, enjoy the life. But the lessons I learned from the cells really reveal the most important aspect, and that is, I'm actually a spiritual entity in a physical body. I'm not actually in it. I'm playing through it. It's sort of like we're remote control robots, and there's a field of identity, like a broadcast. So it's like sometimes I relate to people, say, this is the Bruce television set. This is the television. You're seeing the Bruce program. But the program doesn't come from inside. It's a broadcast that the TV receives and then plays the program. And I go, and the important part about that analogy is simply this, is like you're watching a show and the television breaks. We say the television is dead. Yeah, it's not working anymore. But the more important question at that moment, is the broadcast still here? You know, the TV is broken, but the broadcast is still here. Why? I can get another TV, and when I tune it to the right station, I'm back online again. And that is an analogy for this body that we have is like this 3D television that we're playing. We're receiving a broadcast of identity. And the relevance about that is it's picked up by our cells. There are antennas on the surface of our cells called protein receptors. And in doing my research on cells, one of the things that was quite obvious is no two people have the same identity. I go, what do you mean? I say, because if, Dylan, you take your cells and put it into another person's body, their immune system will say not self. If someone else puts cells or an organ into your body from them, your immune system will say not self and eliminate it. And I go, well, wait a minute. The first thing is this. Obviously, our cells and tissues and organs have something called self that distinguishes them from anybody else. No two people have the same self. And I go, what is this self? That's where my research then led me to understand that on the surface of our cells, there are a set of protein antennas, and they have a great name. They're called self-receptors. So self-receptors, what does that mean? Receivers of self. Originally, science thought the proteins represented self. But now with the quantum physics and understanding of the new understanding of physics, these are actually antennas that are downloading a signal. So your cells have a different set of antennas on them than anybody else. Each person has their own set. And an interesting insight into the nature of them being antennas is there was research where we could take cells out of your body, put them in a petri dish, move them 100 miles away, and have a recording of the electrical activity of these cells sent to right here where we are, let's say. So the cells are 100 miles away, but on a screen on a television, I could see the electrical activity of the cells. We split the screen, is that what they did? And they had the person who donated the cells on one side of the screen, and they had the electrical activity of the cells 100 miles away on the other side of the screen. And when the person had an emotional response, the cells 100 miles away instantaneously activated all their electrical activity. And I guess, so what was the relevance? Well, the cells still have the same antennas that I have, and the broadcast isn't local. The broadcast is everywhere. So if I take cells out of my body with my antennas, move them 100 miles away, I have an emotion response here. The broadcast is also affecting the cells 100 miles away, which then means a very clear piece of research that says your identity is not localized. Your identity is broadcast in the field. Wherever your cells are, they'll respond to you, whether they're in your body or in a petri dish somewhere else in your body. And I go, all of a sudden, it's like, as a guy who wasn't spiritual, and I didn't want to come in from the word spiritual because I came in from the quantum physics, which said, we're in an energy aquarium all around you. It looks invisible around me right now. I go, no, there's television broadcast, radio broadcast, cell phone activity going on, solar energy and all that. I go, so there's an energy matrix all around us. And we are physical particles in an energy field. It's sort of like in my lectures, I take a piece of iron and a file, and I file the iron down, make a pile of iron dust called iron filings. I put them in a salt shaker, these little iron pieces, and I sprinkle them on a piece of paper, and they just make a random pile of iron filings. And I do it again and again and again. Every time I do it, just a random pile of iron filings. But this time, before I sprinkle the iron filings on the paper, I put a magnet underneath the paper. And now when I sprinkle the iron filings, they're not random anymore. All of a sudden, they form the complex shape of a magnetic field. I go, what? Every time I sprinkle now, as long as the magnet's on there, I get a very complex structure. And I go, so what was the difference between random and complex structure? I go, an energy field. The magnetic energy field shapes matter. And this is a foundation of quantum physics from Albert Einstein. The quote that he is famous for, one of the thousands, is the field, the invisible energy, the field is the sole governing agency of the particle. Meaning the iron particles don't form any structure by themselves. But if you put them in a field, then they form a very complex structure. So the structure didn't come from the iron filings. It came from the energy field. Okay. And while I'm showing them the slides, I say, well, wait, instead of iron filings on this piece of paper, this field structure that you see, say that's a tumor. I go, why is it relevant? I say, the tumor did not come from the cells. The tumor came from the field around the cells. The cells were like the iron filings. the tumor comes from around that. And all of a sudden it says, oh my goodness, the idea that we've always told people cancer is due to genes that create these tumors. And it goes up, no, there's not one gene that even causes cancer. Genes are correlated with cancer. That's a different word. Cause means they're manifesting it. Correlated means they're associated with it. And so it's really important because the whole world is essentially still believing, oh my God, I got cancer. I have a gene. I'm a victim of my genes. I go, no, the gene doesn't cause cancer. Example, many women, of course, the big one for them is called the breast cancer gene, BRCA gene. I go, so why is it relevant? I say, Angelina Jolie finds out that she has a breast cancer gene. Her mother died of breast cancer. Her grandmother died of breast cancer. She's so afraid that she has a double mastectomy as a young, healthy woman with the idea, if I get rid of these breasts, I will not get the cancer, which is not true. But the point was this, is that 50% of the women that carry the gene never get the cancer. I go, so what does that mean? The answer is simple. Having the gene didn't cause cancer. It's a lifestyle, the environment that is causing this. And this becomes important because when people have cancer, they immediately feel I'm a victim of genes that went crazy and these cells are doing this to me and the cells are, I have nothing to do with it. And I go, no, that's not really true. That you create an environment that is a field. And the quote from Einstein, the field is the sole governing agency of matter, meaning the field causes cancer, not the gene. And I go, so why is that relevant? Well, consciousness is an energy field. and I go, well, we always used to think if you put wires on a person's head, it's called electroencephalograph, that I can read your brain function inside your head. And so we're always left with inside my head, all this activity is going on. And I go, there's a new device called not electroencephalograph, it's called magnetoencephalograph, not EEG, MEG. I go, what does it do? It reads brain function. I go, yeah, so what? I go, the probe is out here. I say, what does that mean? I say, I'm reading your thoughts outside of your head. And what does that mean? I go, your thoughts are not contained in your head. Your thoughts are broadcast into the field. And then I say, so why is that relevant? And I go, because the field is the sole governing agency of matter. And so your thoughts are shaping the material world that you are experiencing. And all of a sudden it says, oh my God, I kept thinking I'm just another mechanical piece, you know, like where dominoes are all lined up and you hit one and they all fall down and stuff like that. I'm just a domino in a field. I have no power. I go, no, you are generating the field. And that means your consciousness is manifesting this. And it's interesting because quantum physics, 1927, Introduction to the World, one of the founding fathers of quantum physics was a physicist by the name of Planck, okay? And Planck, his most important, one of his quotes that is still here today reads, the mind is the matrix of all matter. What the hell does that mean? I said, the mind is the creator of all matter. That was day one, quantum physics, 1927. It's 100 years nearly since that time. And I go, what? In a recent issue of the journal Nature, which is one of the most prestigious scientific journals, I said there was an article from a quantum physicist, and the article was entitled, The Mental Universe. And I go, I don't even need to read the article. I can just read you the last sentence in this article because it's based on quantum physics, and quantum physics is different than the physics we grew up with, Newtonian physics. Because Newtonian physics, when we grew up, it divided the universe into matter and energy, physical matter, invisible energy. Quantum physics said that was an illusion. Everything is energy. There is no such thing as matter. Matter is a creation. And I go, so why is it relevant? So we go back to the article, Nature, most prestigious journal, and the concluding sentence is, the universe is immaterial. Well, that means not matter, immaterial. The universe is immaterial. It's mental and spiritual. Live and enjoy. And I go, oh my God, the most prestigious scientific journal just said that our mental and spiritual actions are creating the world in which we live. And all of a sudden it goes, oh my God, then I am not a victim of the world. I am creating my world. I go, that was the whole secret that came from quantum physics. We're not victims, we're creators. And then comes the big problem, of course, is then you look at your life and go, I wouldn't have created that. I didn't create that. I'm a victim of that. And I go, sorry, folks, we are creators. Now, the idea is if you don't know you're a creator, then all of a sudden you had no knowing you were involved. And this becomes really important, Dylan, for this moment. And that is this. Until you are aware that you are a creator, up to that point, we have been programmed that we are victims. I go, well, what is that difference? I say, creator is manifesting, a victim is receiving it. I'm just a powerless, you know, individual in a world that is controlling me. I go, it's just the opposite. No, you are controlling you in the world. I go, so why is it relevant? I say, because when you start to try to give people that are not scientifically trained, especially, the insight that consciousness is creating this, the first thing they're going to do is discount it. I go, why would they do that? I go, they'll look at their history. They say, I created the cancer. I created that problem. I created this stuff that I don't like. And I go, yeah. They go, I'm not buying it. And I go, well, that's where the problem comes from. Because when we review our life, then we see all the things that were wrong and didn't work right and all the issues that plague us day by day. And no one wants to own responsibility for that, you know? So when you say, yo, well, I created everything, including the cancer, I created that. And it's like, ooh. And I go, what does this mean? I say, because as we're going to be talking about this now, Dylan, I need the audience to understand simply this. Before they turn off the idea that they're creators because they don't want to own this, I say, why not? Because there are words like shame, blame, victim, guilt. And I go, first important point. Those words imply this. I knew there was a right way, but I chose to do it the wrong way. I'm guilty. I should have shame for what I did. I go, wait a minute. The first thing is this. You had no idea you were a creator. And if you have no idea you're a creator, then you have no idea that what your actions are in any way unfolding into the world that you have here right now. And so people want to deny personal creativity based on a history where some of the things that occurred in that history, they don't want to own it. So they say, no, I'm not. And I go, first, you have to understand that all those words, victim, guilt, shame, blame, all that stuff, they only count if you knew there was a right way to do it and you purposely chose not to follow it.
Well, they still count to a lesser degree.
What's that?
Or perhaps they still count, but to a lesser degree, just very minuscule.
But the point about it is if they had no idea they were involved, then the only way they see it, they were victims of a world. And victim means powerless. And the moment you believe you are powerless, you will pay anybody anything to get some power back. And we start putting out money like the pharmaceutical companies like crazy. I go, oh, man, they're not helping you. They're just taking your money. That's a good idea for them, but not for you. And I say, so look, we're going to start at this moment and say, whatever happened in history, that happened when you had no idea that we were involved in any way in this creativity. Okay? But hopefully after we get a couple of points here, Dylan, from that to the future, we become empowered. Because when you know how it works and you can use it, and if you don't know how it works, it's just the way it is, okay? So how does it work? Well, quantum physics says consciousness is creating our world. And I go, who wants to own the consciousness for what's happening in this world right now? Like right there in Oz, you know, it's like, oh, I'm creating this problem. I go, well, essentially you are. Like, what do you mean? And the answer is this. The mind is what creates our reality. This is what, when we're talking about back in 1927, when physics came in, the mind is, the consciousness is creating this. The mind is the matrix of all matter. And everybody says, the mind. And I go, well, that's where the problem begins. There are two minds, and they're interdependent. They each have a different function, and they each learn in a different way. And that's where our problems come from, right there. There are two minds. Okay, what are the two minds? Well, there's the conscious mind and something called the subconscious mind. Okay, so what's the difference? Okay, the conscious mind, which is part of the brain right behind your forehead, that's the latest evolution of the brain, right behind your forehead. It's called prefrontal cortex. That's where conscious creativity comes from. Conscious mind is creative. Conscious mind, creative. Subconscious mind, habitual. Oh, well, there's two different things. Creative, I can manifest. Habitual, I'll play the program. Okay? And I go, so why is it relevant? And the answer is this. The mind, collectively, is creating this experience. But if you look at the world and you go, my personal conscious wishes and desires are not being expressed here. And if I'm creating, then how come my life isn't the beautiful life that I could have in my conscious mind? Heaven on earth, love, joy, everything, health. Why am I not creating that? If that's my conscious mind, I'm the creator. I go, because 95% of your life is not coming from the conscious mind. It's coming from the subconscious mind. I go, what's the difference? Conscious mind, creative. Subconscious mind, habit. I go, so why is it relevant? I go, conscious mind, when it's operating, is in the seat of control. Imagine your body as a vehicle and there's a steering wheel. And I say, what's the function of the conscious mind? Creativity, imagination. So I say, Dylan, tell me what you want from this world. And you can give me a whole litany of things. Oh, I'm going to get married. I'm going to have a perfect, wonderful honeymoon. And my life is going to be beautiful. I go, that's really great. That is a an expression of conscious creativity. That's what conscious mind is, creative. And I go, but then how come we have so much trouble expressing that? And here comes the answer. The conscious mind, which is the creative mind, can also think. What the hell does that mean? I go, if the conscious mind is, again, back to the body being a vehicle, steering wheel, conscious mind's there, it's creative, it's got wishes and desires, like, man, I'm going to make my life a honeymoon every day. My life is going to be beautiful every day. And I go, that's great. You're driving your vehicle toward honeymoon. And I go, but the problem is this. Thinking causes the mind to not look out, but the mind, the conscious mind, to look in. A thought is on the inside. You know, look, Dylan, you know, today, what is today? Tuesday. And I say, Dylan, tell me what you're doing on Friday afternoon. If it's not written right there in front of you, right at this moment, in a moment, you're going to tell me what you're doing on Friday. I said, where'd you get that information? Oh, I was thinking about it. I went into my mind. I said, Friday, what am I doing on Friday? I go, you're not looking out the window anymore. You're looking inside. I go, but if you're driving the vehicle and you're thinking, you're not looking out the window. We're in a lot of trouble. I go, no. Subconscious habit mind is autopilot. When you are not paying attention to something that you have a program for, the subconscious mind will run it for you. It'll step in autopilot. Your subconscious mind knows how to drive a car if you've been driving for a while. I go, so why is it relevant? Because you could be thinking the entire time and drive to your destination without paying any attention to what the hell was on the road. You could be, I give an example. I say you're in the car with a passenger and you're having a great conversation, back and forth, back and forth. And then all of a sudden you look out the window with conscious mind, now just taking, hey, what's going on out the window, looking. And all of a sudden you realize, I haven't paid attention to the road for the last 5 minutes. I've been in that conversation. I go, now here comes the important question. What was your conversation about? Oh, we talked about this and this and this. Then I say, and what was on the road while you were having that conversation? You go, I have no idea. Why? I wasn't paying attention. I was paying attention to the conversation. But you're still driving the car. You didn't hit anybody. Apparently, you're still legal. Everything's going on. I said, how's that happening? Because you weren't paying attention. I go, when I got involved with the conversation, my subconscious mind, which knows how to drive the car, took over as autopilot and drove the car while I was in conversation. Did I see what was on the road? Absolutely not. Why? I wasn't paying attention. So I go, why is it relevant? And here it comes. Only 5% of the day are we in the conscious creative mind, meaning we have our hands on the wheel and we're driving our vehicle toward heaven on earth. I go, great. But 95% of the day is the amount of time the average person is thinking. I go, so what does that mean? Well, that means 95% of the day, conscious mind is not holding a wheel anymore. I said, but we still have a life, driving a car, walking down the street, doing a job. I go, how's that working? I go, because those are habits. And you don't need to think about a habit. You just have to have the subconscious push the button, walk. I don't need to think when I want to go to this side of the room, the other side of the room. I don't say, okay, now let's move our legs left, right. I go, no, you don't even think about it. You don't even think about walking. You just have to go from here to there. Oh, subconscious mind, that knows how to get you there. You don't have to tell the subconscious mind how to walk. It knows how to get there. And I go, so why is it relevant? We're only creating the wishes and desires that we hold in this life 5% of the time. 95% of the time, our behavior is from programs that we acquired during our childhood development. And I go, that 95% of the time, you're on subconscious autopilot. And I go, well, subconscious, isn't that where all the evil comes from? I go, no, no. Subconscious is a hard drive in a computer called the brain. I go, why is it relevant? Is the hard drive evil? I don't know. But the programs could be good or the programs could be bad. But don't blame the subconscious mind. A lot of people think, oh, subconscious, where all the crap comes from. Well, yeah, most of it does. But there are a lot of good things. When did you learn how to walk? Before you were two. How long can you use that program? You could be 102 and still walking. That's the same program for 100 years. Because the subconscious mind is habit. Once it learns how to walk, it doesn't have to relearn how to walk again. Once you learn how to drive, it automatically knows how to drive without you ever doing that again. Conclusions. Critical. We have wishes and desires. This is what we want. Heaven on earth. Love. Health. Great job. All these. I say great. That's creative conscious mind. Unfortunately, we have difficulty getting those things. I go, why? Because that conscious mind is only working 5% of the time. 95% of the time, I'm running programs. And here's where the issues come from. When did I get those programs? And the answer is the first 7 years of your life. Actually, the last trimester of pregnancy before you're born, the brain is downloading behavior programs. I say, how? Because the brain is not operating at the level of consciousness. That's a higher vibration. That goes back to electroencephalograph, put wires on your head. There are different levels of vibration before you're born and up through age 7, you're at a vibration lower than consciousness. It's called theta. And I say, for 7 years, you're in theta. I say, what's theta? It's imagination. That's how kids will ride a broom. And it's not a broom to that kid. When they're on that broom, it is a horse, a real horse. The mother says, give me the broom. The kid's like, I don't know what you're talking about, because that's not a broom anymore. It's a horse. Or the favorite one I like to always talk about is the tea party, famous tea party. You pour nothing into the cup. You drink nothing. And you say, that was the best tea I ever had. And that's creative theta, imagination. But the theta is also hypnosis. I go, my brain is in theta predominantly through age 7, hypnosis. Why? And the answer is this. In the old days when we bought a computer, you could bring it home, push start, boots up, screen's on. Then I say, do something like write an essay or a spreadsheet or make a drawing. And you go, no. And I say, you got a brand new computer. What do you mean? You can't do that? And I go, no. I say, why not? First, you have to put programs into a computer, and once the programs are in, then you can access the programs. So I go, oh, same thing with the brain. The brain can boot up in the last trimester of pregnancy, but it's a blank screen. I say, well, what do you need? I said, programs. I say, what are the programs that a person needs? I say, how to be a member of a family, how to be a member of a community. What kind of behaviors should I do that are acceptable to this community? I go, how do you know? I say, you observe other people, mother, father, siblings, community, but in a state of theta, that's hypnosis. And I say, why is it relevant? Because you're downloading their behavior, your father's behavior, your mother's behavior, whatever. And once you download these behaviors, then you can be a functional member of the family or the community. an infant can't read a book. It can't go to school like that, but it needs to download those programs. I go, well, great. First 7 years of your development, the conscious mind is not working. It's working in theta below consciousness, which is hypnosis. So you download behaviors. Where? Subconscious program. Then what? After age 7, I am now a creator person. It's like on the computer. First, you had to put the programs into the hard drive. And once the programs are in, then you can access the keyboard and put your information in the computer. And I go, same with the human computer. First, you have to put the programs in before consciousness can work with the program. Okay? So then after age 7, consciousness kicks in. I go, now I'm a creator. And I go, yes, 5% of the time. Because that conscious mind also thinks. And when it's thinking, it's not paying attention to the world. It's not got its hands on the wheel. It's back there looking for stuff. And then when I tell you the real problem is that 60% or so of the programs that we downloaded in that first 7 years are disempowering, self-sabotaging, and limiting beliefs. And then I say, and what does that translate to? And I go, 95% of your life is coming from those programs because that's the amount of time you're thinking and your subconscious is now autopilot running the show. And this becomes a problem. Why? Because you do not see your own behavior. Why not? And the answer is, you are thinking. Where do you think your attention in the conscious mind is drawn? It's not looking out the window anymore. The conscious mind is inside looking for thoughts. So it's not paying attention to what behavior is going on out there. And then I give the story, same story for 40 years, probably you've heard it 1,000 times, but I'll tell it. You have a friend, you know your friend's behavior very, very well, and you happen to know your friend's parent. One day you see your friend has the same behavior as their parent, so you got to tell your friend. You go, hey, Bill, you're just like your dad. Back away from Bill. The first thing, I know what Bill's going to say. I already know what Bill's going to say. How can you compare me to my dad? I'm nothing like my dad. The audience laughs when I tell the story. Why? Because they're familiar with it. I go, what are they familiar with? That a person will not recognize their own behavior. Bill is the only one that doesn't see that he's behaving like his dad. Everyone else is watching Bill going, Bill's behaving just like his dad. How come Bill can't see that behavior? And the answer is, why is he playing his dad's program? And the answer now is simple. Because he's not paying attention. He's on autopilot. He's playing whatever he downloaded. Does he see it? No, he's inside thinking. So everybody else can see Bill's behavior. Bill's the only one who can't see his own behavior. Now comes, audience, please hold on. Hold on to your chair because here comes the truth. We are all Bill. Every day we're playing programs that we acquired before age 7, the majority of which are disempowering programs. But do we see it? Nope. We just see the result. I say, what do you mean? I say, we wake up with the conscious creative mind in the morning. Ah, today I'm going to get healthy. Today I'm going to find a great relationship. Today is the day I'm going to get the best job. And you go out and 5 o'clock you come home and you go, didn't happen today. I go, what does that person think at that moment? Didn't happen today. These people messed with me. That person screwed this up. This person, and you start blaming. Why? Why would I sabotage myself? It must be the other people that are messing with me. And then we blame other reasons as to why we're not doing well. When the truth is, we were all Bill, and all day long, unobserved by ourselves, because our conscious mind was busy, that's why we played the program. The program was not ours. It was your parents' program. I go, oh, well, that's how kids grow up to be just like their parents, because 95% of life is passed from parent to child, all the way through. And, you know, hey, there's some good programs like musicians, kids who are musicians grow up in a world of music and creativity. And guess what? They become musicians. Wow. Oh, there must be a gene for musicians. That's what people want. It had nothing to do with genes. It had to do with what? Programming. They were programmed to create music and to be in music. Okay.
Can we go back even further to preconception and if there's any, because in Ayurveda, there's this important concept called bija dosha, which means the dosha or the elemental makeup of the seeds. And it's perhaps the most important time to attend to your health, preconception, because you're like creating the seed. That human is going to be for the next 100 years.
Dylan, right on, big time, most important, left out of the story for all of us. I go, what? Earlier cultures than ours, before a couple could get married, they had to clear their mind. And bad programs and all that, they had to be cleared. Because before they can conceive, they wanted the cleanest version of the egg and the sperm to come together. Now we know the science behind it.
You're speaking Ayurveda.
Yeah, but I'll now speak epigenetics, because that's the same thing. And I go, what is epigenetics? And the idea is this. We've been led to incorrectly believe that genes turn on and off and control the character of our lives. I go, this is totally false. Yes, people, I said that. Genes do not control your life. I go, what are genes? They're blueprints to make the proteins, which are the building blocks of the body. So the plan of the human body is built into blueprints called genes, which then when they're manifesting, the blueprint is used to make the proteins, the building blocks, which then assemble, okay? And I go, so yeah, those are blueprints. But the issue is a blueprint cannot turn itself on and on. That's the whole thing right away. It's like genes turn on and off. I go, no, genes are blueprints. Blueprint cannot turn itself on and off. A blueprint can be read. Ah, what reads the blueprint? I go, the mind is the reader of the blueprint. I go, so why is it relevant? If you're a good architect, you create a wonderful building. If you're a bad architect, you're going to create a shambles. All of a sudden I say, we all start with the building, the blueprints. How we use those blueprints are not based on the DNA, but on our experiences. So I say, why is it relevant? I say, because our experiences alter the genetic readout. You can be born with a completely healthy set of genes and have cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, heart attack. That didn't come from the genes. That came from reading and using the blueprints. So I go, why is this then relevant? Because in the process, it's called epigenetics. And I say, it sounds like genetics. I say, it's a revolution. So let's just emphasize, what does it mean? Old days, this character is under genetic control, point. Genes control character. That's what everybody believes. So my life is pre-programmed at the moment of conception. That's when all the genes came in, and somehow those blueprints are going to manifest my life. And I go, no. The point about it is simply this. The genes are blueprints. The life experience is consciousness, and consciousness can rewrite the blueprint and change the readout. Doesn't change the blueprint, changes the readout of the blueprint. So all of a sudden I say, the mind is the architect, the genes are the blueprint. And I go, yeah, but once an architect starts to, you know, write its blueprint show, the experience we have, it regulates the gene to manifest what the consciousness was looking for. I go, so why is it relevant? Well, these experiences are called epigenetics. I said, this character is under epigenetic control. I go, what's that? Sounds like the same thing. So epi means above. Skin, epidermis. What does it mean? Epi, above, dermis. What? Just underneath the skin is a layer called dermis, and skin is above dermis, epidermis. And I say, what about epigenetic control? Control, epi, above the genes. I go, what? I thought the genes were turning on and off by themselves. No, no. Control above the genes. Conscious brain, mind is controlling this. I say, how does it control it? Well, it puts proteins and changes the readout of the DNA blueprint. And I go, these proteins are added in response to our life. But guess what? They also affect the germ cells. So whatever experiences I have in my life, they can alter the readout of my germ cells. So when I'm reproducing and my germ cell is mixed with another germ cell, then there's already a program carried with it called epigenetics. And so the issue is this, that is the character that reads the gene, epigenetics. I say, yeah, but that's mine. I say, yeah, you change the mind, you change the readout of the genes. I go, oh, genes don't control me. I go, no, there's no such thing as a cancer gene. Everyone thinks cancer is caused by a gene. No, there's no gene that causes cancer. But depending on the environment, that gene can be correlated with cancer. You know, so Angelina Jolie finds out she has the breast cancer gene, which scares the hell out of women everywhere. Oh my God, the BRCA gene. Oh my God, breast cancer. I'm going to get breast cancer. She has a double mastectomy as a young, healthy woman. She says, if I remove these breasts and I won't have the problem my mother and my grandmother had, they died of breast cancer. I take my breasts off. I will have no cancer. I go, no, the gene didn't cause the cancer. It was the behavior that caused the cancer. And I say, so why is it relevant? Because 50% of the women that carry the breast cancer gene never get cancer. I say, well, there's a point then. And I say, what? Possession of the gene doesn't mean you got cancer. Possession of the gene in a life that's not in harmony, that's where you can get cancer from, but the gene didn't cause this. So I go back and I say, all of us have modified the readout of our genes based on our life experiences. If some of these modifications are not healthy or supportive of us, our genes are still marked with that. And so preconception in many ancient or older cultures meant to do what? Clear the consciousness of the negative characters that were acquired during the lifetime before having reproduction. Because if you clean it, then you're passing on to the offspring a set of genes that is not clouded with bad programming. And so
back to your analogy with the building, it's kind of like having a good quality blueprint, then you wouldn't need to do so many renovations and maintenance throughout the life as many. But of course, if you're just going to treat the building like shit, and you're going to get cancer. And I just want to add, there was in 2016 a peer-reviewed study in the Nature Medicine Journal that showed 90% of cancers are environment and lifestyle caused.
That's right. Less than 10% is even connected to heredity. Yeah. A very important point. They looked at the fate of children that were adopted into families where there was cancer running in the family. The adopted child ends up getting the same family cancer with the same probability as any of the other natural offspring, except the adopted child has completely different genetics. So the point was, the cancer didn't come from genetics. It came from programming that was not supportive or in harmony with life.
And it's so many other diseases. It's like you see diabetes, or my mother and auntie have diabetes, 100%, or colon cancer. I'm getting it. Yeah.
If it's type 2 diabetes, 100% lifestyle. Had nothing to do with the genes. And everybody wants to fix the genes. I say, it had nothing to do with the genes. Had the understanding of the consciousness, which was altering the genetic readout epigenetically. You can have a normal gene like the adopted child, but come into a family where the programming will make that normal gene read as a cancer gene, and they'll get cancer even though there was no such thing as a cancer gene. They didn't have a cancer gene. They didn't even come from a family where there was cancer in it, but they get it. And all of a sudden I say, why? Because we have let go of something the ancient people knew, especially in Ayurvedic medicine, that consciousness is a major determinant of the character of our lives. And that's why clearing the consciousness even before reproduction means I'm getting an opportunity to remove the epigenetic markers that I put on them because of my experiences so that my offspring doesn't carry what I have. And we find that epigenetic markers, experiment, they had rats and they had a smell like a perfumey smell, like a rose smell. And they would create the rose smell, you know, the aroma, and then they would shock the rat. And then next time they put the aroma on, then they would shock the rat. And at some point, the rat got into it and understood the moment they smelled that aroma, the shock was coming. So they programmed themselves like that. So epigenetically, it's like, if that smell comes up, I'm getting shocked. They found that when that rat mated with other rats, they passed on the fear to the offspring that never even smelled this stuff before. Offspring never smelled this stuff, but then they put the aroma in the offspring, and all of a sudden the offspring are already psyched because they know a shock is coming. And they never experienced it themselves. It was passed from their parent. Four generations. You can pass that experience on to four generations later, a newborn rat smells this stuff and immediately has the experience of getting a shock. And so it says epigenetics, passing the program on for generations. It happened in Europe in World War II, in the Netherlands, where there was no food and they were on starvation, and they had to adjust their biology to that. They found that it was called the grandmother effect. The grandmother experienced it real. The grandchild had the same genetic readout that the grandmother had to manifest in her life, was passed down to the grandchild, that they had the same behavior physiologically as the grandmother who lived through the starvation. So
absolutely,
it applies, of course, to humans and everything.
And I've
witnessed
that. We're
beginning to find that out. But Ayurvedic medicine, that's been around a hell of a lot longer. We just have to relearn what they already knew. And that's the issue where we are today. We got to go back to the understanding that was already there. And the idea of programming and controlling your life, 95% from program, that's 400 years old. The Jesuits had told their followers for 400 years, give me a child until it is seven, I will show you the man. I go, what the hell were they saying? Exactly what we just said science found out. First 7 years, you download programs, 95% of your life now comes from those programs. And so for 400 years, people were told exactly, give me the child for 7 years, I'll show you the man. What people don't recognize is that little bit of wisdom didn't get lost on the powerful controllers of our world. Well, those people already recognize, oh my God, we can control the population if we can control the first 7 years of their lives. This is where Catholic school came from. Catholic school, give them the principles in that first 7 years, they'll carry it for the rest of their lives. I go, but today there are people that obviously have been using this understanding for years, controlling us as a population. And I say, the Jesuits might have been benevolent in their understanding of programming, but in today's world of programming, it's basically to disempower us. And if we become disempowered, then we become victims. When we become victims, we will pay anybody anything if they will help us not be victim. And so we are being programmed to be powerless, which is what the world is experiencing right now. I say, you want to see the programming? Watch an infant who can barely walk working with an iPad. I go, geez, the kid is working with an iPad. He can hardly walk. I said, that's a program. So we've all been programmed. How's your life? 95% of your life is the program, just as the Jesuit said. I go, but I wasn't there when the programming was occurring, meaning I wasn't conscious in the last trimester of pregnancy. I wasn't conscious for the first 7 years. Consciousness kicked in as a neurological function after age seven. I say, so where was I before age seven? I say, well, lower than consciousness. It's called theta. As we mentioned, theta is imagination, but theta is hypnosis. And then all of a sudden you realize how a child acquires its behavior by nothing more than observing those people around that child, downloading their behavior as the fundamental programming, and then because they spend 95% of their time thinking, then these downloaded programs are shaping that person's life. Now comes the interesting question. Well, the programming occurred before I was born. I have no idea what the program was. Okay, the programming occurred for a whole year from zero to one. I have no idea what the program was. Wait, it occurred for a whole year from one to two. I still don't have any idea what the hell the program was. By around three, you might have some recollection of programming in some way, behaviors, okay? But here's the point. I don't know what the hell my programs are. They were downloaded before I was conscious. But now I come with the answer. The answer is great. Why? 95% of your life is the program. Your life is a printout of your program. So I say, simply look at it this way. Look at your life right now and recognize the things that you like and want that do come into your life. They come in because you have a program to acknowledge those things. But, big but, the things that you wish and desire, but you can't seem to get there, and you work hard and you struggle and you put a lot of effort into it, and you're sweating. I'm going to make it happen. I'm sweating. Over. I'm going to make this happen. I'm working hard. Why are you working so hard? And the answer is because that destination is inevitably not in your conscious program, and that you're trying to override the subconscious with your efforts. And I go, hey, subconscious, a million times more powerful, operating 95% of the day. Conscious mind doesn't stand a chance at changing it that way by overpowering. You have to rewrite the subconscious program. I go, you can rewrite them? Well, Dylan, if we couldn't, this would be a really crappy program. I say, I'm sorry, that's the rest of your life. I got to go. No, you can rewrite them. But the subconscious is called the habit mind. I go, so why is it relevant? I said, if habits were easily changed, then they wouldn't be habits, would they? A habit, by definition, resists change. Thank goodness I got a habit how to walk before I was two. I'm glad it doesn't just one day change and I forgot how to walk one day. I say, no, that damn thing's going to be in there 100 years. Okay? So I say, yeah, but we have some good habits and we have some bad habits. And I said, well, what do we do? I said, you want to change the habit? I go, yeah. I said, how do you change the habit? And I go, ah, this is the difference between conscious and subconscious. Conscious is creative, imagination. You can have wishes and desires. You can, you know, read a self-help book and it will say, oh, these are the principles of how to do it. And then I go, well, that's really nice. The conscious mind just learned those principles. And then I say, well, now that you read the self-help book, did your life change? And the answer, no, not really. I go, why not? I changed my conscious mind. My conscious mind read the book. My conscious mind can take a test, get 100 on everything about what that book said. But I said, but my subconscious didn't change. I go, that's not how it changes. The conscious mind, creative, can learn from a book, a lecture, a video. Aha! I just changed my conscious mind. I just changed it. Subconscious does not want to change. So I said, well, then how the hell do I get into that? Because that's running the show. I go, there are three ways that you can control a change in the subconscious. There's a fourth one, but I can't talk about it because that one I can't control. And I said, what is it? It's like a shock to the system. You go to the doctor, you find out I got terminal cancer. It's like, I got to change my life. Ah, well then. But I can't program that one. But I can program the other three. So I say, what's the first one? I say, how did I learn anything in the first 7 years? My brain was functioning at a lower vibration than consciousness called theta, which is hypnosis. I say, how do you get that? Oh, in the old story, you remember the hypnotherapist would have a watch and it'd be swinging back and forth. You're getting tired. You're getting sleepy. I go, what was that all about? I said, lowering the vibration of the brain to drop it into theta, which is below conscious. I go, wow. I say, how can I do that today? Do I need a hypnotherapist? I go, no. The reason is this. There's all ranges of vibration that a child picks up over the years before 12. About time is 12 is when you get the higher vibration. The lowest is delta, that's sleep. The next higher vibration is theta. That's imagination, twilight, reverie. The next higher vibration is alpha. Consciousness is here. Calm consciousness. And then the next higher vibration is called beta, and that's focused schoolroom consciousness. And I go, a child gets them ramped up through the first 12 years. But an adult has all of them. So when you were sleeping last night, you were in delta. And as you woke up this morning, the first thing you went into was twilight reverie, which is the theta process before you wake. And then the next moment you're awake, calm, go to work, higher vibration, beta, alpha to beta. But then when you come home, it goes backwards. I came home, high vibration, beta. I calmed down at home. My vibration lowers now to alpha. And just at the moment my eyes disconnect, I fall asleep. The moment, boom, I'm sleeping, I drop down to the next vibration, theta. That's hypnosis. I go, so what does that mean? I say, I can put earphones on at night just before going to bed and play a program of what I want to be true in my life. a program of relationship, a program of getting a better job, a program of improving health. I put this program every night. I go to bed, and the moment my conscious mind falls apart, I don't hear the program, but my theta mind does. And so my theta is downloading whatever was in that program while I'm sleeping, which means, hey, that's no effort on your part. All you have to do is go to sleep. The program is going to go in while you're sleeping. And I go, you repeat this process, and in a short time, whatever that program was now becomes a program in the subconscious mind, the repetition part, okay? But I say, but that works through age 7, the theta process, but you still learn things after age 7, how to drive a car, how to play an instrument, how to do something more complex. I go, but you can make it a habit by what? Practicing, repeating it, repeating the behavior, repeating the behavior. You didn't learn how to drive a car the first day you sat in the seat of that car. You had to practice driving the car. You want to play an instrument? You didn't play the song you wanted the first day you picked up the instrument. You had to practice how to do it. You want to change your life and it's not working the way you want it? Then engage in a practice that will represent what you want. And by repeating a practice, it becomes a habit. That's what's different. Conscious mind can go, yep, I got it. I go, subconscious mind, repetition, repetition, repeat that thing. A sticky note on the refrigerator, that's, I changed my mind, I put sticky notes. I go, that's not a practice, that's a suggestion. A practice is something you have to do. Practice, repeat it. The New Agey story, which I always think is funny because they say, fake it till you make it. What the hell is that? I say, well, you're an unhappy person. I go, yeah, but I want to be happy. I say, then do what? All day long, no matter how unhappy you are, all day long you say to yourself, I am happy. I am happy. I am happy. Repetition. After a number of days of saying that, guess what? You'll wake up. You'll already be happy. Why? Because by repetition, you download a new program, okay? And so I can create the behavior I want and practice it just as like I practice driving a car, practice playing an instrument. I have to practice. And practice, repetition, is how we create habits. So that's the second way. And the third way is even, for me, like the greatest thing since sliced bread, they would say. And I go, what is that? And I go, it's called energy psychology. Well, what the hell is that? It's a kind of psychology that opens up super learning. What the hell is super learning? I go, maybe you've seen somebody read a book by just moving their finger down the page. As fast as they move that finger down, they read every word on that page. Just like that. I just read every word. It could be hundreds of words. I read all of them. That's super learning because the subconscious man is a super learning device. If you can activate super learning and then use that to put a program in, then you can reprogram the subconscious mind in minutes, 15 minutes, walk away, new behavior. So there are three ways. The first way is theta hypnosis or self-hypnosis. The second way is practice, repetition, create a habit. The third way is energy psychology, a new version of psychology that engages super learning so I can put a new program in, walk away 15 minutes later with a different behavior. It's a miracle. My life is here. I'm living my miracle because of energy psychology. There's the whole story of my life about that. And so I say, why is it relevant? Those are the three ways that you can rewrite the programs of your life. I say, what are the programs? Your life is 95% program. Whatever is not working, it means that you have a program not supporting whatever that destination is. And you can do that.
I get that, like totally honor that's important to reprogram, and subconscious mind for majority of the people is dominating 95%. For my personal approach, and I just want to explore this other one, is, well, how about kind of enhancing that conscious creativity? I know you said there's subconscious is always there, but for me, I'm just like, I like to enhance that and kind of transcend the subconscious mind, let that just go to the background. I mean, do you personally or people who you work with a lot or who are implementing these practices, are they getting higher than that 5% conscious creativity dominance?
It's called the honeymoon effect. I said, what does that mean? My life is blah, 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 every day playing the same stupid programs, blah, 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 blah. And then I meet somebody. I fall in love. I said, oh, I'm falling in love. Let me just acknowledge, it doesn't have to be another person. It could be a pet. It could be a chef who loves cooking.
It could be the sun.
What's that?
The sun, the ocean.
Yeah. So I say, how come my life was blah, 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 meet this person, and the next part of my life is called the honeymoon, which is what? Heaven on earth. How did I go from blah, 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 24 hours later, heaven on earth? The answer was this. It's the first time in your life when you fall in love that you stop thinking. You stay mindful. I go, what does that mean? I say, I'm not thinking. Therefore, my conscious mind is now operating fully. I'm not thinking, because if I'm thinking, then the subconscious mind kicks in. If I'm not thinking, I stay present, I stay mindful, then I am the active creator of my life at that moment. And that's how blah, 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 in just 24 hours can turn into heaven on earth. You just stop playing the damn program. The movie The Matrix is not science fiction. The movie The Matrix is a documentary. Why? We've all been programmed. Yeah. And what does it say? If you take the damn red pill, you get out of the program. I say, what's the taking the red pill? I say, well, in the case we just talked about, it's falling in love. I say, what do you mean? You fall in love, you stop thinking, you stay present. Oh, well, then now the mind is not controlled by subconscious programs. Now the mind is controlling life with conscious program, wishes and desires. That's what the hell the honeymoon is. Heaven on earth, wishes and desires manifesting. And then all of a sudden, I said, but then why does the honeymoon end for so many people? I go, inevitably, they start thinking. And the moment they start thinking, then the programs that start manifesting are not coming from the conscious wishes and desires. They're coming from the program I got from other people. So I had trouble for 40 years trying to get a relationship. Why? Because if you downloaded the behavioral program of relationship by observing my mother and father, you would never have a relationship. They were dysfunctional. But I downloaded dysfunction. So in trying to create a relationship, what was I doing? Throwing dysfunctional behavior in front of my path. And that kept me from ever getting a relationship until I rewrote the program of what love was about. And then ended up now 25 years in a honeymoon with my partner, Margaret. Why? Because both of us knew we came with programs that weren't beneficial. But both of us knew it wasn't us, it was the program. And therefore, rather than getting into arguments, which most people do because they confuse the program with the person, and the person shows up with a bad behavior, then they're the evil one. I go, no, the bad behavior was evil. They're the spiritual one. They're the good one. That's the one that brought you into the honeymoon. But it's the subconscious programs that take us out. And most people, that's when the honeymoon ends. Because when the subconscious programs show up, then it's a game of blame and victim and shame on you and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I was Bill. I was playing my dad's program. I didn't see it. But yeah. That program did not support a relationship. So rather than getting into an argument, when both people in a relationship recognize that the behavior that they're playing doesn't really represent who they are, it represents their programming. Then there's no reason to fight. Now is a reason, an opportunity to say, do you want to change that program? Let's change the program. And then you can rewrite. And I say, so what's the result? Well, when a couple gets together and they identify, where remember, Bill does not see his own behavior, but everybody else does. Oh, I do not see my behavior, but my partner does. Okay. And since I can't see it, I don't need an argument from my parent or my friend to change that behavior, because an argument is going to prevent me from getting involved. But if Margaret says, you know, you just played this behavior, do you want to play that? It's not a very good thing. And then I go, oh, really? I didn't see I did that, Bill. But now that I've been informed, I can change it. I go, great. Then I say, so what's the result? I say, when a relationship comes together and any of those negative ones that show up from the subconscious manifest, rather than getting into an argument, it's an opportunity for a discussion, which then leads to an opportunity to rewrite. And if you rewrite all those negative ones, then guess what? Then your subconscious mind and your conscious mind are in harmony about love and health and harmony and love, all those things that you want. Because if you eliminate all the bad programs, then guess what? you actually could think all day long, but now your subconscious is playing what? Programs of wishes and desires. Then you're going to have honeymoon whether you're paying attention or you're not paying attention, because both minds have the same program. That's the destination that we need to go to.
And it also brings that importance of having compassion for other people. And just like Margaret was doing so beautifully of saying, okay, I recognize that this is a pattern. I'm not going to get angry and snappy, because that's all probably my pattern as well. But, and yeah. Bill, I see you. Like, let's work together. So it's a really beautiful invitation to work together in harmony to rectify this. And I also want to add perhaps some Ayurvedic, quick, just list some Ayurvedic measures of
please do.
Getting rid of these programs. Like, there's certain therapies even called nasya, which is administering medicine through the nose to clear the sagittal sinus and the glymphatic system in the brain, where I'd assume on a physical level, some of these programs are there, you know, other than intellectually going into it and doing things like you mentioned, or even the theta, hypnosis, all that stuff. But yeah, there's so many things.
Yeah, but there's a destination. When you are doing this process, you've already, there's a reason why you did the process, because what is the net result of the process? There's something called the means and the end, the means to get to an end. And I say, if people function or focus on the means only, they have trouble getting to the end, because the end is the destination. I say, even before you start something, first you have to have the destination. Then the means will use to get to that destination. In Ayurvedic, there are means to get there. But you still have to start off with, where am I going? What do I want? That's your, you have to have the goal as a destination, and then the process will facilitate the experiencing of that goal. But absolutely, if you just say, do the process, and you don't have the goal in mind, it doesn't necessarily turn out the way you want. So the processes are very important, because they're reinforcing the intention of the goal. And you need those processes. You need something, but don't live for the process. You live for the goal and use the process to get to the goal. But don't emphasize the process. On a previous Zoom I just had, we talked about a golfer. I said, what's that? Well, the golfer stands above the ball, the golfing club in their hand, and all of a sudden, what are they thinking about? Am I standing right? Am I holding the club right? Am I, they're going through all the details of how I'm going to do this and the swing and all that. And I go, you're paying attention to the means. You're not paying attention to the end. I say, what's the end? The golf ball's on the green. The idea of holding yourself and doing all this stuff, it's like, well, that's nice, but that's not what got the golf ball onto the green. It was the consciousness that said, this ball is going to get hit and land on that green. I don't have to tell my body how to do that. I practice swinging a club. The body knows how to do it. But when you sit there and you're practicing it, what am I doing? Am I holding it right? Am I doing all this right? I said, that's not the end. That's the means. I said, before you hit the ball, you're supposed to be focusing on the end. Where is it going? Not how it got there, but where it's going. And it's very important in every process that you're talking about is, I have an end, but now I'm learning the process to get to the end. It's not, I just learned the process. Let's learn the process of how to swing and hit a golf ball. I go, that's great, but that's not golf.
Absolutely.
Golf is getting a ball into the hole. and that's the destination. So in Ayurvedic, it's really important is, what's our destination by carrying out these practices? And then I learned the practices, because now I'm focused. It's not focusing on, did I do the practice just right? No, guys, no, that wasn't the focus. The point was, am I getting to the end? And that is where it's really important to empower people to say, what is it you are seeking? Let's make that a hard vision. What is it you want when we get out of here? Not how we're going to get there, the end is important. The means will get us there. But it's not the means being the most important part. The means were necessary to get to an end. And that's the important part.
I love the word intention. I think it's so powerful for that, because it's...
That's the game.
And then there's also no rigid attachment to the outcome. Because you have that, you set it, and you live it. Let it go and do what.
That's the absolutely, Dylan. That's the best part of the game, because the idea is if you hold on that it has to be the way you did it and it doesn't work out, you're going to just suffer the rest of your life because it didn't work. And it's like maybe you didn't see there was a better way to get to the end, and the way you chose was not the better way, and that the universe is showing you it didn't work this way. Why? Because that's not the way to get there. And yet most people then get caught up in, well, it didn't work, and I'm going to make it work. And I go, no, just listen to the message. That's not the way the universe is. There's a better way to get there. And so if it doesn't work out the way you think, it doesn't mean you can't have what you want. It just means it's not going to happen that way, but there's got to be another way.
Yeah, beautiful, Bruce. Now we've got to wrap up now, but I can talk to you for ages and ages. You are full power. Like, you've been doing this for decades, and it's just, I love it. I love the energy. And
well, Dylan, I have to tell you, this was not like the first 40 plus years of my life at all. That was program. I was living program. I was programmed to be successful, so my science was great. But I was misprogrammed on relationships so bad that I could never get a relationship. And that was really crap, because one of the most important things in life is relationship. It is the nature of community. And community starts with first one other person and then expands to as many as the community will hold at that point. And the idea is then learning relationships are like one of the most important things we should have learned as a child. But we downloaded our parents. And I have to say, most people's relationships, hey, 50% end in divorce right away. That's a bad relationship, right? If you came from a family like that, you already got programmed with something that didn't work. That's why the divorce showed up. And yet you're walking away with a program that you acquired that will do the same damn thing until you change that program.
So powerful. Yeah, and just today, it's so, it just goes simple thing of just create your own reality almost, especially today when there's just so much like darkness trying to channel you through a tunnel of life perception. Just create your own, go beyond it. You're so much more powerful. So.
Beyond it. Don't settle for less. That's what you said, intention, right? Set the intention. The means will get you there.
Beautiful. So much. Thank you so much, Bruce. I know you could speak for so much longer, but is there anything else you want to leave the audience with briefly?
No, I think that'll give them something to think about. Absolutely. For a while.
And look deeper into it.
And then this is why then your work becomes so very important at this point is let's carry this education to make it a way of life and not just a dream. Life doesn't have to be a dream. It could be manifest. But you have to make sure your programs support the dream.
Absolutely. So Bruce's website is brucelipton.com. He's on Instagram. And, of course, his famous, well-known best-selling book, Biology of Belief, is still kicking. Still kicking.
It's working since 2005, so it's still there.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Thanks.
Yes, right. Full power, Bruce. Thank you for listening and staying in with it. You know, I think some of it you might need to listen again. It's just so much information he's packed into this hour. I mean, what an inspiration. And if you can also watch the videos on Instagram, we post teasers and snapshots. And it's usually a video of the speaker. And you can just see him. He's such an animated man. He's like such a young soul, such a young man in the aged, well-experienced, seasoned body that he has, healthy body, but he's just full power. So yeah, if you appreciate this stuff, leave a review, share it, check out the other episodes. So much good stuff coming up on the Vital Veda podcast. Until next time, my friend, much, much love.